There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the alt-hostful intro with Katie and Kyle.
Hey.
Wait, which one is who? Who's Matt? Who's Jonah?
No, you're not Matt and Jonah. You're your own people.
Oh, my God.
What?
You said that, not us.
Yeah. Have some self-respect, goddammit.
All right.
You're Kyle Clark. You're Katie Levine. You don't need to be Matt or Jonah.
Yeah.
I don't want to
No, Matt wouldn't have done it that way.
I don't want to
Wait,
be.
What?
Matt, nothing.
I am buying a guitar right now, though.
Oh, my God. Is it left-handed?
Of course.
Is it a guitar you definitely don't need?
He's going to smash it.
All right, you're the Matt.
There we go.
So you must be the Jonah, then.
I guess.
She is the taller, beardier one of the two.
Yes, that's true.
who doesn't like sports?
Hey, you know...
It's like a weird brain switch movie.
Oh, that'd be a weirdly lateral move. Like, it's not a... it's a strange... Guy switches brain with other guy. Like, no, it's not really.
We just go about continuing life like, it's close enough.
Yeah. I kind of like a lot of this music. I mean, I'm not left-handed, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You guys know Moshe Kasher?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Been on At Midnight a bunch. Old comedy friend. Started a podcast called Hound Tall, which is basically they take a single topic and they figure out the mysteries of the universe based on that single topic. So it's like an hour-long chat, and he has a panel of comics. And they learn everything they can possibly learn about a thing in just an hour.
Yeah, and so it's different topics every time. And then it's once a month, too.
It's a monthly show. Mm-hmm. Are you producing that one?
Yeah. I haven't been at any of the live ones. He does them live at UCB. I haven't been at the live ones yet because he did a bunch and then came to us wanting to put it out on Nerdist. But I listened to the first one, which is all about harems with Pete Holmes and Beth Stelling and Jillian Lauren, who wrote a book about her life in a harem.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know, this actually, his podcast reminds me of the In Our Time with Melvin Bragg podcast that I always talk about. But where people have senses of humor. I mean, Melvin Bragg's podcast is great, but it's dense with information and no one on it's particularly funny.
Well, you mean that they're one just, about the atom?
They're just...
Didn't laugh a minute at you?
They're just... Today on In Our Time with Melvin Bragg, we talk about the atom and how many different ways we can pass out what it means. And then it's like a bunch of, well, and then scholars, come on. But this is pictured that, but probably with dick jokes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sure that, you know, there's going to be a lot the whole time.
So that's on iTunes now or Nerdist.com. Yeah. This episode is Dax Shepard. I've known Dax forever. Ever and ever and ever. And back, he was a groundling. Back in the old days, back when I was tinkering around over there, when I realized, like, oh, I should just do stand-up.
Oh, really? And that when they'd say, hey, I'm starting a scene, and then you just go like, I have a gun, and everything's on fire, and this woman's having a baby.
Airline travel's weird. Dex Shepard's promoting a movie called The Judge. It's in theaters today, October 10th, but such a sweet, hilarious guy. I adore Dex, and I'm so happy for his success. He's such a lovely man, and I am very proud to present to you.
Could you almost say that here comes the judge this Friday? 70s TV reference.
You've been demoted. You're no longer interim Matt.
If he'd have liked that, Blank Patch would have laughed for sure.
Yes, because it was a reference that took place before 95. Here's Nerds Podcast number 582 with Dax Shepard.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh, wake up, Dex. We're doing a podcast. What happened?
No, I'm still Parenthood. No.
What? Ellen? What happened? Did you do Ellen today?
I did Parenthood from 7 till 2, and then I did Ellen, and now I'm here.
How was Ellen?
Hmm.
That's a high bar.
It was really good.
I hope this goes as well in.
Well, her eyes can't be rivaled. They're really maybe the most iridescent things I've ever looked at.
I just thought you meant she had really good vision, and no one can see.
That I don't know.
They have an eagle eye.
It's probably all show, no go. They probably suck as eyes, but God, are they gorgeous.
They're just piercing.
They really are. They're a specific type of blue. It's just...
Did you tell her how you feel? She'd want to know.
I think that seems like something I would. I like to be really forthcoming with my compliments.
How about... Are my eyes okay?
They're really nice.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
They really are.
Well, I mean, you know.
Which is a testament to hers that they look better than yours, because yours do look very, very nice.
I have nice eyes, but they're not Ellen eyes.
No. Well, who has Ellen's eyes?
Just Ellen, I think.
We hope.
Or whoever's
especially
on her donor
if she
card.
Has like one of these retinal scan devices,
mm-hmm.
and there's another set out there that are identical.
This one of those, and someone's going to have to carve her eyes out to get into the vault.
Well, no, what we're suggesting is maybe there's another pair out there.
Do you think there's an identical pair of Ellen eyes out there somewhere?
I do.
I don't know if that's how eyes work.
What are we at? 7 billion people?
Yeah, we're roughly.
So even if her eyes are 1 in a billion, yeah, there's 6 other pair, right?
But
no one even uses that compliment as a superlative, 1 in a billion, because that's too much. You say 1 in a million.
1 in a million.
So even if we went to the nth degree and said, you know what, we're going to give her the ultimate compliment, they're 1 in a billion, you're still looking at 6.
Well, I like that you went algebraic with the nth degree, but I think if you factor in for inflation, it should be... Like 1 in a trillion at this point.
Would be the ultimate compliment.
I think so.
Yes, because the implication should be you're the only one on Earth.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
1 in a million, I mean, that's Los Angeles. It's like, okay, so there's 12 other people here that are just like me.
Not very flattering.
Mm-mm.
No, to be 1 of 12?
Yeah.
Congratulations, you're on a baseball team.
Hey, you're a 12th.
yeah, exactly.
You're a 12th of something.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Thanks.
Hey, meet these 11 other dudes that have the exact same quality you do.
I mean, you know, there's not a lot of you, so that's something, so you're almost special.
And as long as you don't run in the same circles, you're liable
you'll
to
never
seem
need to
unique.
See each other yeah
right.
So we just need to like geo spread you guys so that you're not,
and that's why we've brought you together guys because
we're forming a super team
and we want everyone to occupy a certain region, a specific region of the city.
I think Ellen will be fine with this plan.
That is the grodiest journal cover I have ever seen.
This is Chewbacca.
If indeed that is a journal cover. Oh, it just looks like a fly trap for bacteria.
It's, I gotta tell you something.
It's a shag rug.
This book, which you will sign because it's our guest book, uh-huh. Clive Barker just drew a dick in it.
Come on. You had Clive great. In here?
No, we went to him.
Oh.
Clive just drew a dick, which is great. There's a little guy basically.
I would have liked him to put the needles from Hellraiser coming out of the shaft of that penis if I had it my way.
I think that emotionally they're there.
That's true. There is a lot of subtext.
You know what else, though?
The pubic hair does look very jagged and
dangerous. Do you know why that's not there?
Why?
Because the dick didn't solve the puzzle box.
Ah,
but if the dick solves the puzzle box,
boom.
Then time to play.
Let's all hope that the dick doesn't solve the puzzle box during coitus.
No, that's not the right. Is it? Because that is pleasurable, supposedly. This is a good book that you're going to be signing,
mm-hmm.
that I'm very excited for you to sign.
Well, with the exception of Clive, it also looks like the artwork is an obtainable goal.
Well, this is
Grant
Morrison,
really.
So that's a tough one. He drew a Batman in here. And Jeff Bridges drew Jeff Bridges bowling.
I won't be copying Clive. The only thing I draw is something I invented in fifth grade called Ball Sack Cowboys. And they're a ball sack and penis that look kind of like a horse. And
okay.
You put a little cowboy on them.
All
and
right.
Then, yeah.
Those are the Ball Sack Cowboys?
One of the few paintings I ever made was the March of the Ball Sack Cowboys, and there was about 11 of them coming down the side of a desert scape, like a hill.
So they're 1 in a 12.
Yes, they were. They were. I rounded them up for this painting. They only will be together in this painting.
Just for this one time.
It's a weird painting, too, when you start dating someone. They're kind of either you're moving in together or something, and then there's this painting of the March of the Ball Sack Cowboys. You know, that you did when you're 19.
I think it's a litmus test. If the girl still decides that she will take her clothes off for you, then you should marry her.
Yeah, which I did.
Good.
Yeah. Which, in fact, I have.
So that worked out.
But it's always like my wife's very into cleaning out the house, you
mm-hmm.
know, particularly now because she's pregnant, so nothing is safe. You know, toothbrushes. Are we using these? Do we need these? The front door handle.
We need all of those things. Yeah. You could throw some stuff away.
They're essential, actually.
Yeah.
She is slashing prices on everything at the house.
Everything must go.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So knowing that she's that type of gal, she'll be going through a closet and she'll hold up the March of the Balls that Cal was and say, why are we saving this?
Because it's unique.
Yeah.
No, that's a baby. That's a baby. Don't throw it away.
Because we have a girl, so it's not even like the 12-year-old boy version of me will eventually want that painting.
Right.
No one's going to want it.
Someday you could auction it off for charity, maybe.
If I get infinitely bigger, yes. Maybe one day it'll generate $1,100 for some needy children or something.
And the Ballsack Cowboys ride into town.
I mean, I'd have to really skyrocket. Because anything shy of Brad Pitt, no one's buying Ballsack.
I feel like there's a lot of room between... I think there's a lot of good steps between you and Brad Pitt.
Not for me. It's binary.
Just that's it?
You're either
that's
Brad Pitt
it. It's a
or
zero or a yeah, one. Yeah, so exactly. He's the one and you're the zero
that's
right now?
Absolutely. Right.
That is a tough scale.
There's stardom and then there's everything else. And he's in that rarefied air.
But you work all the time. You're working on a show. You work tons.
I do work. I feel like I work pretty often.
You work a lot.
Yeah.
And I think... Were you in the Sunday Company with Andrea Savage? Is that how I met you?
Were you dating Andrea.
I was dating Andrea.
Is that private?
No, not
okay,
at all.
Good.
This was like...
I've divulged who I'm married to, so...
Yeah, so now...
I just broke that story.
Quid pro quo.
you were dating Andrea, and we were not in together. She had been in before me,
oh, okay.
But we were friends through that lengthy
2003.
Process.
This was like 2003, I think.
You're one of those guys that's good at that. I know two dates.
Okay.
I know 93 I graduated high school and 2000 college. That's it. If it didn't happen in those years...
Then you don't know.
I don't know.
What year did you get married?
Really don't know.
Okay.
Well, last year, so 13.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Nice. But I won't know that in 3 years when you ask me.
Well, now there's a recording of it, so...
I can always consult it. That and I journal. I journal every single morning, and I have for 10 years. So we do... My wife's not very date-oriented either. So we'll go like, I think we're coming up on 7 years of dating. Right. When was it? Oh, it was a Red Wings game. Right. When was that? And then I'll have to go in my journal and actually like go through 40 pages to find the day that we.
Pen and paper?
We'll write it down and then both of us forget it 2 months later.
Is it digital journal, pen and paper journal?
Pen and paper. Yeah.
Oh, so it's difficult to. There's no search function for that.
There isn't for,
keyword
Red
search.
Wings, Red Wings, mm-hmm. Kristen, which I'm sure I would have misspelled. From having first met her. It took me a while to master that, whether it was a K or a C.
C-R-Y-W.
Yeah, I'm a left-handed dyslexic, so you should get a load of this journal. Did you ever see the Crumb documentary?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Remember his older brother's cartoons kind of disseminated into this bizarre hieroglyphic writing?
It's the same thing?
Mine's the big version of that.
Now let me ask you. Well, and
you know how Leonardo da Vinci had like the mirror system. So in his journal, you had to look at it backwards and upside down to read what he wrote.
This was
his thing. I don't even need that. Nobody could possibly read my.
So
journal.
In a way, you're better than da Vinci. I think is
that
the
was
takeaway.
The short way to say it.
He needed a mirror,
yes.
And you didn't. Yours
he was
didn't need a mirror.
Yeah, I just write so shitty that you don't need any encoding.
How long were you in Growlings?
For a long time because, I do know this. I lied to you just now because I do know that I moved to LA in 96. I moved to Santa Barbara for a year in 95. Then in 96, I moved to LA and I immediately auditioned and got enrolled.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wasn't in the Sunday Company until I guess around 2002 or three.
It takes that long.
Yes. Compounded by the fact that I had gotten into UCLA mm-hmm. right when I had been asked to go to the fourth level, and I wasn't foolish enough to try to do those things at the same time. So
right.
I also took like a year off. I guess I pushed it. So it took me even longer than normal, which I think even if you're blowing through the program and you're a guy, it's like a 4-year thing.
Right.
Cause for girls, it's quicker.
Because spots have to open up.
That's exactly right.
And they don't open up.
I've been told this, and I don't know if this is accurate. I mean, but this is what I was told, that for every 3,000 people that enter
mm-hmm.
the first level there, 4 get into the Sunday Company.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's what I've been told.
Well, that's not even like 1 in 12.
It's not even close.
No.
No. But yes, Andrea was just a bit ahead of me, and then I met you through her.
Yeah, which was a good group of people.
You're a different person now, as I am a different person. But the guy I met then, do you feel like you're much different?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at the core, we always feel like ourselves. But when you met me, I was I was what I refer to as Peter Hardwick, my fat drunk brother.
Okay, right. You were hanging on by a thread, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it was a thin
by
thread.
By the way, mine was only one strand thicker, I think, at that time. But when I see you now and I see, like, optimism in your face, I go, oh, good, good, good. Things really, they worked out.
Andrea, you know, I have to give Andrea...
Was she instrumental in that?
She had a lot to do. Like, she was the one that said, you should go see a therapist.
Right.
Because...
you have depression.
I'm not telling you that you shouldn't. I'm not saying quit drinking, but I'm saying there's a reason that you do it, and you should figure out what that is.
Right.
I was like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
And then, and then, you know, at a certain point, she was smart and saved herself. And at a certain point, was like, I can't deal with you anymore. And I'm like, but I quit drinking like 2 days before we broke up. And she was like, yeah, but I'm done.
48 hours.
And she was such a well-adjusted, healthy person,
uh-huh,
that she was right to do that, and it really helped me. So she was very, very helpful in my recovery.
She's a very smart person.
So fucking smart and funny and awesome.
Sexy. And
yeah.
She was on a House of Lies, the show my wife's on,
right,
2 seasons ago. So I got to see her a little bit, which was fun.
It's nice when all of you...
I'm promoting my new project, by the way, which is...
You're promoting
here to talk about Andrea.
Oh, sure. Great. Yeah, yeah, so where can we see Andrea? So, when's she out in theaters?
She's around. She's she drops quite a while ago.
She dropped
years ago now.
She's on the streets now. Word on the streets.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it's fun when so she's someone I have this great fondness for. And then I didn't even know she was on the show. And then Kristen came home and was like, oh, my God, there's the coolest girl is guest starring right now, this girl, Andrea Savage. And I'm like, oh, my God, yeah, I super know Andrea Savage.
What do you mean you super know Andrea Savage? No, I mean we just...
I mean I know her inside and out. No, no,
no,
I mean
we had sex. I mean...
I mean she is so good and bad. No, that's not what I mean.
What I'm saying. I'm the father of her child. Okay, this is not going well. None of these words are coming out right. Yeah, she's a... I feel like I've always had to... I always am attracted to super funny, like, girls who are super... You spot that thing, and I assume the same thing happened to you with Kristen, where when you start riffing and the other person is matching you and topping you, then you're like, whoa. And then you get this crazy, like, brain boner.
It's a different attraction. Yeah, yeah. But she's one of the few comedians who I've... memorize some of the things she said in stand-up, and I repeat, like Sarah Silverman, I know some of her things, and we all know Chris Rock things, but she has that joke, Andrea, that you know, people always say to about little boys, like, oh, look at this,
oh,
he's
I know
a
this
flirt
joke.
He's
yes.
a, oh, look at him, he's flirting,
he's,
you know,
gonna
he's
be a heartbreaker,
yeah, he's gonna be a heartbreaker, look at him flirting. She goes, no one really looks at a little baby girl and says, oh, she's a little cock tease, isn't she? look at this little cock tease.
She's gonna be a little whore when she gets older.
It's so good. She's
yeah,
a little
a great
cock
fit.
Tease. I've always wanted to just call a little baby girl a cock tease and pray that everyone around has heard that
well,
that bit.
Do it when you're around comedians and you'll be fine. But
yeah.
when you take the comedy craft into the real world,
right? Out to Sizzler.
It does not sizzle.
Oh, how old is she? Oh, really? 18 months. And she, what a little cock tease.
How dare you? The power
fried
of Christ compels you. And then they throw you out.
Yeah, but it is, to have that with someone's pretty. But did you quit drinking for good?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, okay, great. Me
Thanks.
Too.
You
yeah.
too?
Oh, God, yeah. It was 10 years in September.
Boy, the words almost came out. When was you?
Yeah, yeah. Say it.
When was you?
September 1st, 1994. See, I'm so full of shit. I know all these dates.
94
I didn't realize
was,
I knew. I'm
was,
sorry, 2004.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it was 10 years this September.
Nice, yeah. I'm 11 years October 8th.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Mm.
Got a year ahead of me.
I know. I'm an upperclassman.
I don't know if I like that.
But it's... Okay, I'll start drinking again and then start over, and then you'll be 10 years ahead of me.
I need that.
I mean, I proved I could do it at this point.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how... And what a weird coincidence that right around that time you started working a lot. I mean, what a crazy thing that is.
Well, for me, it was more driven by the fact that, okay, so after 8 years of auditioning and trying, I got to a point where I was doing what I had hoped to do, which is I had just done Without a Paddle. Then I did the Mike Judge movie, Idiocracy. Mm-hmm. And then I was about to start Zathura. And this was like everything I dreamed of, and I was more miserable than I had ever been in my entire life. And I was like, something's majorly broken here. There's a variable in this equation that is, and it was that. It was drinking. So even if I had become wildly successful, I was not enjoying a lick of it, you know?
And was that because of the, because the alcohol?
Because I was a hardcore alcoholic and drug addict. Yeah.
But those are just symptoms of a level of much larger
issues. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I don't think there's one single, I mean, my dad was a recovering alcoholic, so clearly it's genetically I have a disposition. Sure. But then also I was like, very severely dyslexic, and thought I went to the special ed room every day for 2 hours. Like, they come to the class and be like, okay, we're here for Dax and Pete. Somebody wake Pete up. And then we would leave, you know, me and Pete, who was visibly handicapped, would leave the room. And it was rough. That was a rough fucking 5 years, first grade through fifth grade. Well, then when I got a handle on it, then everything kind of changed. But I think that core experience of everyone thinking I was stupid.
How did they train you to?
You know, I doubt that what I was doing is even scientific. I can't imagine that the technique I was taught with is what they still do. But in a nutshell, we had these little cards. They were probably like 8 inches long, and, you know, 4 inches tall, with a little magnetic strip on the bottom. And it'd have a picture of a dog, and it'd say dog. And then I would fucking insert this thing into a machine, and it would go dog. And either, I guess, I eventually memorized every single word, you know, in its entirety. Because you don't ever learn to do things phonetically. Like, you can't ever learn to... I will get stumped still writing the most inane word. Like, I'll... Not there, but let's say there. And I'll go, oh, how do I spell there? And then I can't even tell you what two letters make that sound, T-H, you know. So, I get completely lost. I couldn't even begin. I can't. They go, look it up. Well, I don't even know. I can't even take a stab at what the first letter is in a lot of words.
So it's difficult to envision. It's just not there.
It's just not there. I can say the word. I know the word. I can, you know, talk about it and define it. I don't know. Yeah, whatever's broken in my circuitry, I can't connect those sounds with those shapes.
And then so when you're given a script... Well, I guess by the time
now,
you started auditioning,
yeah, it's
you
all like
it
rote, I guess, because now I read fine, and I also write professionally. Like, it's weird. I've now gravitated, you know, to writing and reading quite often. So, you know, I don't know. I just you get over it. You know, this was in that that most recent Malcolm Gladwell book, the Goliath book. You know this one?
This is the one I've not read yet.
Yeah. Well, I won't be on record saying you should or shouldn't, but I will say this. There's a whole chapter about dyslexics in there, and what it basically says is if you're dyslexic, you're 3 times more likely to go to prison. But you're 5 times more likely to become a CEO of a company. So it becomes a thing that either really fucks you or is a great advantage. You know, if it's something you end up getting over, it then becomes a virtue. And I think that's certainly what happened with me. I remember thinking, oh, I want them to figure out the loci so you can genetically test if your kid has it, so I'll know ahead of time to be preemptively
right
going down that road.
So maybe you can start training them before they even realize that there's anything.
Yes. Or do an amniocentesis and get rid of them.
Right. If you
now,
know.
Just throw them away. No, but.
And you're
but,
10 times more likely to marry Kristen Bell. It's
right. Infinitely more times. Well, because I'm the only person married to her and I'm dyslexic. So you're a trillion times.
So you're one in a. You literally get the trillion.
Yes. But, you know, having read that chapter and then and really thinking more and more about it, I don't know that I wouldn't choose for my kid to be dyslexic, you know. I guess I would roll those dice and do a high risk. You know, if we make it through, it'll be really an asset.
Do you already have a child?
And I have a second one on the way.
Second one on the way.
Yes. Very shortly, I'll have two.
How old is the first child?
1.5 years.
Okay. That's a good spacing, I think. They'll be about 2 years apart.
There's very clear pros and cons, which is we're going to be up to our neck in it for mm-hmm. a minute because the one still not potty trained, can't get dressed, you know, is really needs us nonstop. And there'll be a second one that needs all those things too. But then the huge advantage is they're going to be 2 years apart. They'll play together. They'll be friends. Right. When we go places, it won't be the mom and dad show 24 hours a day, which it currently is, you know. So that part, I think, makes it easier in the long run. But, yeah, it'll be rough for probably a year.
You must know Mike and Donna Furman, right? Do you know Mike? Do you know Donna? Mike Furman? You don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
The Furmans?
The Furmans.
No.
No, my buddy Mike Furman and his
Are they
Donna
in our line of work, show business?
Well, yes. Yeah, so Donna's a writer and performer. She was UCB, and Mike was my writing and performing partner for a long time. But their kids are just a couple years apart, and he's like, yeah, it's great because they play together, but they also activate each other.
Right.
So, like, in the middle of the night, one will start going, Dad, Dad. The other one's like, Dad, Dad. You know, like, then they... Then they basically...
Yeah, that's rough. And then also there's this... There'll be the issue of the babies for the first year and a couple months are on a two-nap schedule, but then they drop down to one nap. So we'll never have that break, right? So one will always be awake unless we drug one of the two, which we're open to.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if it gets you a little more sleep, then it just puts you in a better headspace. And ultimately, in the wrong, it's better for them.
It's downriver thinking. You know, it's really, it's forward thinking at its best. It's for the safety of the whole clan, really.
So you don't, okay, so if you, so you worked today on Parenthood at 7 a.m. and then you went and did Ellen, but you probably have way earlier than that because of the child.
No, and luckily for us, well, not even lucky for us. I guess most babies sleep for about 12 hours at this age.
Okay.
And we don't like getting up at 6:30. That's a deal breaker for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we put the baby to bed later. You know, we put her to bed at 8, and then she wakes up around 7:30, 7:45.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, so I was actually out of the house before she woke up.
Just to fuck with the baby, were you like, wah? Like,
yeah, well, I slammed every door in the house, and then I went full throttle in my car out of the driveway. Yeah,
show her what it's like.
Just to screw Kristen over. If I got to be up at this time, I think everyone should be up at this time.
Well, just light everything behind you.
Yeah,
and
we're supposed to be in this together, so you be miserable too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like we're very lucky in that she wakes up pretty late. We're hoping to even make that, you know, more pronounced. If she could be waking up at noon, that's really the sweet spot.
If you could get the baby to sleep for 17 hours a night.
Yes.
And then you get 5 good hours, you feed her a couple times, and then put her to bed again.
That is virtually what they sleep for a long time. So they do 12 at night, then they do two-hour naps. So you're really looking – you only got the baby for 8 hours.
First of all, that's really fucking lazy.
It is. It is.
Second of all, that's not going to last.
No.
But it's nice that you
– it all ends in December. Yeah. It's all over in December. That's when number two comes.
Is Kristen enjoying pregnancy, or is it like, I cannot wait to get this weird alien at life form out of me?
We both love it. She is the greatest pregnant lady. Like, we only want two kids, but we want her to remain pregnant forever.
Okay. There might be
because she's high out of her mind on oxytocin. Like, she gets a big mega dose of it. She is so giggly and fun to be around. And in fact, I will make jokes at night and they're just killing. And it's very misleading. I'll think I've stumbled upon gold, like I have a 10.
Right.
And then I try it out at work the next day and it's nothing. And I realize, oh, my audience is totally high.
You have to get them all pregnant.
It's like it's like testing material on an audience on nitrous.
Right.
You know, you're not going to get really good data that way.
Or you just keep performing for people on nitrous and then
another option. Just do the Burning Man circuit.
What show did we do at our theater?
You and I?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did stand-up together.
But it was a couple years. It was just like about a year and a half right before your movie came out.
Oh, well, there was that. But then you and I were also... Yeah, so that was Doug Benson.
That was Doug's show.
Yes.
Right.
Interrupting something, probably.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Who fucking knows? And then you and I also did, I believe, stand-up at the same time. Maybe at Largo.
Probably at Largo, yeah.
Yeah. That's where it was.
Good old...
That's one of the times I looked at you and I saw hope and I just thought, oh, this guy made it.
Oh, God.
So good.
It's so...
Well, you know, a fisherman always sees another fisherman at sea, they say. So, you know, I was on the lookout for it.
Well, if they're both at sea and they have fishing rods, I mean, that's a pretty easy spot.
It's a giveaway.
And they're fishing into booze.
It's
and
a total tell.
Coming up with nothing.
Yeah. If they look real greasy and baggy under their eyes.
I actually had to... I reached out to someone today to try to tackle that there's... I get really uncomfortable when I see old pictures of myself. Like, I'm still not okay with it because I just look at it and I just go, ugh. And DirecTV, if you search for me on DirecTV.
Which I do.
This, then you know this.
Yeah.
A Peter Hardwick picture comes up. And it's really off-putting. And so I had to get someone to, like, please reach out.
Now, how did you pick the name Peter?
I picked the name Peter because there was a guy, or lady, I don't know. Someone was fucking with me on my Wikipedia page.
Uh-huh.
Which I was alerted to by someone on Twitter.
Okay.
And also one of my family members who wanted to know if we had a secret brother named Peter that they were never told about.
Okay.
Someone kept adding this person, Peter Hardwick, into my life on the Wikipedia page.
Really?
And I would get it removed, and then that person... Then Peter would reemerge with another profession somewhere else in the bio. And so it was this fun game of cat and mouse.
Yeah.
And
this
so,
is of your own doing, by the way, because you have a tech-savvy fan base, which is your problem.
And I appreciate that about them.
No, none of my fans go to Wikipedia, so I don't have to deal with any of that. I don't even think there's anything on the Wikipedia page.
There must be.
I've not been to it since maybe 7 years ago when I learned of Wikipedia. However,
can you see if Dex has a Wikipedia page? Of course, there's a Wikipedia page.
I avoid this kind of stuff. No, you know, I saw you on something the other day. You were on Bill Maher.
Yes, I was on Bill Maher.
Yeah, and you were talking about, first of all, great fucking photo of me. I apparently just ate a salt lick the night before.
And you were in Newsies.
Yeah, exactly.
According to the hat. But I have the same hat.
But you were on Bill Maher, and you said, I've repeated it a bunch of times since I saw you talking about it, because you had a very poignant observation, which is what a tiny snapshot in time a tweet is,
mm-hmm.
and how it's like, it's a fleeting thought quite often, and people don't even feel the way that they feel an hour later. And it's like, I don't know why that didn't occur to me, but yeah, most of those tweets are reactions, not actions. It's not like they drafted it for a week and then published it.
It's just they have the ability to express something when they're in,
when they're motivated,
apex emotional state.
Yeah.
And I mean, in a pre-internet era, you would get upset and then you'd have to walk it off. And then,
well, you'd go get a lined sheet of paper and a pen, and you'd look up an address, and then you'd finally write this letter. And then, you know, now it's an hour or so later.
You'd be tired halfway through and be like, I'm not even mad anymore. But this is like, I'm mad now, flick.
Yes.
And then off. And then you can't take it back.
That just reminded me of, I had a brief stint as a host at California Pizza Kitchen in Brentwood. Which is probably the single worst place you can work, because Brentwood is all rich people, yet CPK is a very pedestrian place, and they expect a level of service.
Yeah, it's not just that they're rich people. They're a lot of like, well, I need to see the manager. It's a lot of those types of people.
Exactly.
Entitled. They're entitled rich people.
They are. And so I made a realization. Basically, it was a bet that I was right, which was they would regularly come in and they'd go, you know, I can't believe you guys don't take reservations. I mean, this is insane. And I go, yeah, it's the policy. It's insane. And I go, yeah. I go, you realize that I neither own this CPK, nor does CPK own CPK. Pepsi owns CPK. So you would really need to take this up with Pepsi Cola. And then they would be so mad that I was being snarky that they would say, what is your name? And I know that these lazy fuckers are never 3 hours later gonna write a letter when they get home. So I would say, I'll write it down for you so you don't get the spelling wrong when you write the letter. And I would write Dak Shepherd on a piece of paper and hand it to him. And I probably did that a dozen times in 3 months. And I never got a call that was like, hey, we got a letter.
Now they would just
tweet it. That threat is so fucking absent. Give me your name. This is such bullshit. No one's ever writing a letter.
No, you should have written down. You should have written down the name Keith Pepsi.
Keith, yeah. Keith Pepsi Cola.
I'm Keith Pepsi. My dad owns Pepsi. And so you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah. But if they had, in that moment, the Twitter handle for...
They would have fired.
Because people just are too lazy to do it later.
They would have taken a picture of you standing where you were.
I guess what I'm saying is Twitter has given the lazy a voice. That's really what it's given.
Twitter has allowed entitled rich people to thrive in customer service environments.
Like when I was a kid, I got I built car models, and one of the models was missing a full section of the plastic parts. And I was really bummed out by this. And my mom said, well, write a letter to whoever makes those. I forget the name of the company. Write a letter to them and say what happened and give them the like UPC code. And I actually did this. And I got in the mail like 6 models from Revel or whatever it was, you know.
Oh, wow.
And that's how it kind of worked. You took the time to do that and they knew you were kind of sincere. If you tweet Revel, I fucking hate this thing, where are my parts? They don't give a shit. it, rightly so.
Well, they might now because, you know.
Well, if you have a bazillion followers, sure.
Let's tweet at them now and be like, where's our fucking...
I've used that a couple times, and I've felt a little unethical about it. Like, I blasted prescription, online prescription provider, prescription for medicine. And it's just the worst company in the world to deal with. And finally, I started tweeting about it. And then all of a sudden, I got a call with a special number. And I, of course, want to use the special number. But then I also feel like, well, everyone should have this special number. So it's a real ethical battle.
No, just do it. Anyone else would use it.
Okay. Yeah. Now I feel much better.
Yeah.
And we're talking about my health.
Yeah, it's important.
And the health of my family.
I feel like karma would want you to use that number.
And then the other day, I can't tell you how many times I'm unsubscribed to LinkedIn. I mean, I really can't tell you. It's
LinkedIn?
LinkedIn. I can't even pronounce it, but
it is.
It's impossible to unsubscribe. I get them nonstop.
I like the idea. What if it was like, I can't unsubscribe to Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln? Yeah. And you just thought $5 bills were invitations yes. to join. I just keep getting these
every
invitations.
Every time I leave my house, someone's giving me one.
But yeah.
But I tweeted it, and then they said, direct message us your email, and it'll be gone for good. And
I should do that. I cannot stop getting the fucking LinkedIn invitations.
Yeah. It's an unsubscribe button. I don't know why it doesn't work.
I don't want to join LinkedIn.
No, ever. I'm not so proud I'm on Twitter. You know, I don't know that I need another.
It's important these days.
Yeah.
You know, a phone number I came across recently, and I'm just trying to get the stones to leave a message on it, is I got the Bill Murray 800 number.
No.
Where you call Bill Murray and you just say like, hey, do you want to do this thing? And then he just decides.
I had been told you have to basically pitch his lawyer, and then his lawyer calls him. But there's a number you can call? And
yeah, there's an infamous 800 number.
You're kidding.
That's how the last guy got him to do this movie that just came out.
Really? The St. Vincent?
Yeah, that he's probably going to get an Oscar for.
Yeah.
You know, like he just said he would call him every couple of weeks and be like, hey, be in my movie. And finally, one day, Bill just called and goes, hey, it's Bill Murray. And he was like, meh.
Yeah, if there were, if there's a single career to point to that you would want for me, it would be him.
It would be Bill Murray's.
Yeah, I mean, I think weirdly it's so hard for comedians to stay relevant, and I have theories on why that is. But
let's hear them.
He's done the impossible. He is as relevant today when he acts as he ever was. You know.
You know what it is about Bill Murray is that he doesn't ever feel like he's. He's the best kind of alpha personality
mm-hmm.
in the sense that he doesn't force you to, it's not like me. It just sort of feels like he doesn't need you. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Sure.
He just doesn't, he's very comfortable with himself
yeah.
and he doesn't need you to like him. And he also he just happens to make some of the most interesting comedy choices.
Yeah. There was a really cool interview with, he did on Letterman, I want to say 3 years ago, maybe. And Letterman said, Bill, you recognize, right, that you created a comedic paradigm in the 80s that now every single person after you has imitated. Any one of these guys. And he just starts listing, you know, Will Ferrell, this person. And Bill's like, you know, obviously not jumping at the opportunity to take that huge compliment. And he just was kind of nodding. And then Letterman goes, I mean, you realize how great you are, right? Like, how do you do it? And he goes, you know, if I can just slow down and breathe and be calm and have faith that it'll happen, it happens. It always happens. I just have to breathe and be calm. And I thought, that's outstanding fucking advice.
Well, especially with our brain types.
Yeah. The times I've been best in movies is certainly when I am just very, very relaxed and I have a lot of faith in that if I listen, something great will happen when I respond, you know. But it's, I don't know why, just the way he said it, I was like, oh my God, that's all you really have to do, huh?
Well, what is it that you think are the pitfalls
the trappings of
aging comics that make them not relevant?
I think that so often the engine behind comedy is feeling like an outsider, being uncomfortable, that it's the trappings of success, that as soon as comedians get really comfortable and really widely accepted, that engine just runs out of gas. And I don't know if he's kept himself pretty uncomfortable. I think that's maybe part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But these, and you almost find, and I won't use any specific comedians, but you will find, I think, in a lot of popular comedians that they actually start doing more and more period piece comedies because it's almost like they got to go back to that time in their life when they remember being completely on the outside.
Who are you thinking of specifically?
Well, I just noticed like Will Ferrell, who I absolutely worship. There's no question. He's just amazing. All of a sudden, it's like there's Anchorman and then there's the basketball movie. And it's all going back to a period in his life where he was still observing these alphas that he was the victim of, you know, that whether they were a teacher or they were the hero newscaster or they're this or that. It's almost like that's where the memory, that's where the mining is to do. That's where it all is at, is back when they were still taking it on the chin regularly by the world.
Right.
And, you know, as should happen, they you have to deal with less and less and less and less the more success you get. And it's just the world gets more and more comfortable and you're not, you know, you don't have a chip on your shoulder.
I have a theory that's somewhat related to that, which is that it's about hunger.
Sure.
It's about hunger for, and maybe it's hunger for attention, hunger for success, hunger for money, hunger for accomplishment,
pussy.
Hunger for something, hunger for pussies.
Yeah. Multiple pussies.
Just as many pussies as you can be hungry for. Like, where is this an all-you-can-eat pussy bar? That's fantastic because
Baker's dozen of pussy.
Yeah.
Well, I also have a theory that I this isn't based on a single kernel of intel. This is just me being a fan of Bill Murray and just letting my mind wander. He seems to also have a real commitment to getting himself in uncomfortable situations or situations completely that someone his age wouldn't be having. You see videos. He'll pop up in people's apartments. He'll like party with teenagers for 4 days. He'll go on a bender with two strangers. Like, I think his commitment to putting himself in these bizarre situations is somehow part of that recipe.
It's never – you have to keep asking questions and keep – wanting to learn and, you know, up until literally the day Joan Rivers died, she was still wanting to figure it out and hungry answers and trying to figure out how to stay relevant and figuring, you know, like looking. And it wasn't like, I'm just going to take a break for a while and then try to come back later. Yeah. It was like it never, ever, ever stopped.
That one seemed to me to be the unhealthy version of it. I mean, first of all, I loved her, obviously, and I loved that documentary about her, and it made me really, really, really love her. But she was very forthcoming and honest about that her insatiable desire for that level of status was what kind of drove her. And that seems like a really a rough way to be on this ride forever. I don't know why, but Bill Murray doesn't strike me as having that. His is more like he's a genuine fucking weirdo. And he nurtures the weirdo side of him, and then it comes out in movies.
Well, I think there's that, you know, I think maybe it's tied to having that faith where, you know, he'll just, I'll just walk down this road and whatever happens, it'll probably be fine.
Yeah. And, you know, he's my favorite comedian to do dramas. Because he's one of the few comedians that when he goes and does a drama, he's not trying to snuff out Bill Murray. Like he is always still Bill Murray. He's just – Bill Murray has shitty fucking days and he has disappointment and he has all these things. And so he just – what I like is that he doesn't try to shove that under the rug.
He doesn't try to do anything and it doesn't feel like – you know, sometimes when comics or when comedy people – flip over to do drama, they're like, this is going to be my Oscar moment.
Yeah,
like you
it's
can
rough.
Feel
yeah,
the
it's tangible.
Please take me seriously.
Yeah.
You know, it's that was the Chevy Chase thing.
Yes.
Please take me seriously. I don't want to be. And with Bill Murray, it just sort of feels like, you know, I feel like doing this right now because why not? And and that seems fun. So I'll try that. And why not do this? You know, it's like the ones that just do stuff because they just are drawn to it and not. For some result that they're trying to, like some external result that they're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
I think those are where the most interesting choices come from.
Yeah. I think once he got on the Wes Anderson path, like this whole other thing kind of opened up. That was so fun to watch.
And that's the comforting thing about what we do is that it, you know, it's not like I mean, if you're a professional athlete, yeah, you get like maybe 10 years.
If you're super lucky.
If you're super lucky, yeah. But you know.
Followed by 30 years of not being able to walk.
Yeah, but yeah.
You could have 10 great talk show years, and then you can't walk.
And then a 4 in 10 chance of having permanent brain damage.
Yes, yes.
But you know, as comics, you can have a lot of different phases of your comedy voice as you get older, which is kind of neat, you know?
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, I've been on a TV show now, will be 6 years this season.
Jesus.
Yeah. Would have never set out to try to be on that show, never thought of even pursuing that kind of thing, and then was in the right meeting on the right day, and someone said, would you want to do this? And I read it, and it was good, and then all of a sudden, I'm in a, quote, drama for 6 years, you know? And again, yeah, the kid in the Groundlings would have never predicted, like, oh, yeah, I'll try to do that. So, yeah, it is cool that there's a lot of different avenues open to you. Certainly, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is never going to do a broad comedy.
No, but he should.
That's not going to happen. You really think he should?
I think he should try it.
Okay.
I think he should try it and, you know, spend 6 years preparing for the role.
Right, doing 100 years of stand-up and... go through UCB and Groundlings and Second City.
Yeah.
He'll teach at all these places. And yeah, open mic nights around the country.
And then ultimately
several years of podcasts.
That's right.
And then let him go.
And then he'll get
at 75.
it'll be the most inspired.
Yeah. Bill Murray will cry with envy.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the Daniel Day-Lewis track to me is, yeah, I don't. That's not my preferred track because it just sort of feels like you got a lot riding on that one thing, huh?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great if you, you know, great for him.
Yeah. And he's about the only person I can really take serious that does that, that uses that approach to doing things. You know, like Last of Mohicans, I don't know, he lived in the woods for 6 months before they started filming.
I mean, listen.
And he's the only person I'll grant that.
Anyone else would be like, come on.
Because here's
what
I kind of think about it. It's like, okay, so they never break character. Great, I get that. And I understand why it's more efficient on set to not have to get back into it. Great. Now, when you go home and your wife calls and you're acting like Bill the Butcher, I just feel like... that's a hard level. That's, you know, it doesn't seem super fair to everyone around you.
I don't think that factors in.
I don't either. It's a very singular pursuit. Yeah.
And by the way, if you agree to be in that person's life,
yeah,
you kind of got to know
that's
what you're signing
point.
Up
that
for.
That is a good point.
And I mean, it's not like all of a sudden one day she's like, why won't you answer to the name Daniel? You know?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Like,
That's true.
That person probably, and who knows what their relationship is like, but maybe there was a conversation of like, I'm going to get a little weird when I'm working. And
yeah.
It doesn't happen all the time, but just in these periods, just be cool with it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's their deal.
You're right, actually. You're right. I have a very unpopular opinion that mirrors that sentiment, which is I don't think that if you marry a man who is 7 foot tall,
mm-hmm.
and slam dunks basketballs while 3 other guys that are 7 feet tall are pulling him down. Mm-hmm. And you have that level of testosterone and manliness, and you're also making $100 million a year. You can't be shocked when he also gets some ass on the road. I just don't think you're entitled. You're like, you're dating a phenom who's hyper male. He's like the embodiment of id physically, and we are all reaping the rewards of that. You just have to be a little more honest about what you're getting into. I think it's a little naive to go like, oh yeah, I'm going to get this fucking gladiator 8 hours a day. And then as soon as he takes his jersey off, he's just like my nerdy fucking neighbor that works at the bakery.
Right.
You don't get it all.
No,
I'm sorry.
I guess that's true, but
this is a rant I make, and this is where I leave you, actually. I was playing a dick disc jockey, and I got to like do some of my unpopular rants. But it's one that I honestly do think. Like in all honesty, I'm married to a super beautiful actress who's an amazing singer, and she's super funny. She is one in a bazillion.
Yeah.
She's also an actress that goes away on sets for months at a time. There's a much stronger likelihood that in my future something weird will happen with her and some other actor on a set in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And that's that's part of the whole smorgasbord.
You're that, okay with that?
I'm not okay with it, but I'm not a dumb fuck. I know that there's a certain risk. It's a risk-reward analysis, and I can't get all this awesomeness, which is this shining star who's right. attractive to everybody,
right?
And think that I have the same odds of having a perfectly flawless fidelity marriage.
Well, that's probably why.
What I'm saying is I would work through that because I know that that's part of the fucking deal.
Right. That's a very healthy attitude and one that I certainly wouldn't have.
Right. I know it's
but that's why
unpopular,
it's probably important for you to, you know, stay. Keep,
but if
keep
you're not
gym.
Expecting that, if that's not in the realm of possibility for you, then all of a sudden you feel completely blindsided and then you're making a decision of like you're going to ruin something amazing over something. I don't know. Here's another stance I have.
Okay.
It is men and women will stay with a spouse that has developed a gambling addiction, that has actually lost them their job, lost them their house, lost the college funds, put them in a ditch where they're now living in a one-bedroom hotel. Mm-hmm. They'll stand by that spouse until they get help. They'll stand by an addict that drives their kids to school hammered and on drugs. They'll stick by that person. That's a behavior that's actually endangering the family.
Yeah.
Now, if a man or a woman on a business trip to fucking Tokyo gets a blowjob, they will blow up the whole marriage. They'll walk right away. They'll take their whole family and leave over that. And I think that that's a real shortcoming in human thought.
Did you get a blowjob in Tokyo?
It was a hand job.
Okay. But to be fair, they had painted a face on the hand.
I thought for a moment it was a blowjob. So yes, mentally I was guilty of that. But I think it's crazy that someone would rather stay with someone that drives their kids drunk to school than someone who got a hand job in Tokyo.
Well,
that's a weakness. That's a human mental weakness.
I guess it is. Or just don't get a hand job in Tokyo.
Let me put it this way. If I had a choice between Kristen driving blackout drunk with my kids in the car or giving someone a hand job, I'd pick her giving a hand job.
Really?
Fuck yes. And anyone who doesn't is a piece of shit.
Okay.
You'd rather endanger your kids than deal with that.
God damn it. You're starting to make
I'm getting provocative.
You're starting to make a compelling point.
I'm looking for sound bites now.
You're also just you're just
burying myself.
You've just given Kristen like two green lights.
Yeah, yeah. Every interview I'll do from this day on will be about my willingness to ever give hand jobs.
You're going
to
find this weird map hidden behind her clothes in the closet. It's like there's a green pin in Tennessee, because you already okayed that. Mm-hmm. And then Tokyo.
These are the safe zones, the global safe zones.
Anything that starts with a T is fine.
Yeah.
Trinidad, Tobago, go.
Can I go? I'm going to go one step further with
okay,
this. Can
please.
I? Because I've been dying to get this off my
please,
chest.
Please.
Here's another thing
rip
that really
off.
Scares me on this issue is we live in the era of Twitter and Facebook and all this media.
Mm-hmm.
And now if someone does something, they get caught. Everyone gets caught. There's just no way you're not getting caught.
Right.
And everyone gets exposed. General Petraeus has to step down.
Right.
Okay. Had there been all these things in the 60s, we really would have robbed ourselves of Martin Luther King. We would have robbed ourselves of John F. Kennedy. We would have robbed ourselves of Franklin D. Roosevelt. All these people that had affairs that we now know about, it would have come out early. They would have been completely ostracized for good, and we would have had no civil rights leader. We would have had no great president. We have put this – we're screwing ourselves by having this insane commitment to everyone's personal life being a certain way that we're going to rob ourselves of a lot of great people.
Well, I don't know if – I wonder if back then it – I feel like I don't know. I feel like back then they might
have. If girls from the orgy with Martin Luther King that the CIA apparently taped, if they had some fucking selfies of that orgy and that went viral, let me tell you something. Then no one would be at his march.
You don't think so?
No. The Make a Dream speech would have been a bunch of right-wing people with signs.
Don't you think it would have been a bunch of dudes like, I'm pretty sure there's going to be an orgy here.
That contingent may have
I'm
shown up.
I'm pretty sure
up.
It's going to be a million-man orgy.
But do you don't see what I'm saying at all?
I do see what you're saying that we
now everyone's living out loud. It's impossible not to.
Yeah.
And if you live out loud and you get caught, then you're gone. And I just think that's a super dangerous recipe for us. It started with Clinton, really. He was the first person that it became so quickly ever present. And they started impeachment proceedings. And it really tainted what was an amazing presidency. So we almost ruined that one. But had that happened, today and then had it happen in the first month, which I'm sure there was shit going on in the first month, he would have been out right away. We would have missed out on him.
Well, I think that we all have made this unspoken agreement with, well, or not so unspoken agreement, when every time you sign up for a social network and you click agree.
Yes.
But ultimately,
having read none of the words in the disclaimer.
Who has time?
Yeah, yeah.
But ultimately, yeah, I mean, all of our lives are on display, and you know, and you see it. People get convicted. It's like, oh, well, you committed a murder and then posted a picture on your Facebook account. Like, that's yeah. not your room. Like, that's out.
Right,
of the world. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely, people are definitely more, there's more witch hunting now because it's part of our nature to do that.
Yes. And yeah, well, also, it takes the eye off us.
And also, it's, everyone has a megaphone.
And so you're in the same boat that I am, which is you grew up in such a different time where, I mean, I can't imagine if you would have given the 12-year-old version.
I don't know what
you're talking about. Okay, then I'm wrong. Yeah. But I grew up in a time where I can't imagine if you had given 12-year-old Dax Shepard a camera by which he could have sent pictures of his penis to his girlfriend in seventh grade.
I don't know if I would have done that.
Well, I know 100%. That's all I would have done. I would have been blowing through batteries like you wouldn't believe. I mean, I can't tell you how much I would have abused that technology. But I, you know, there's so many awesome aspects to all this, and then there's also some very bad ones.
It's
and
just where, very where, powerful. Where do you have to use it responsibly? That's all. It's an Uncle Ben. You know, it's a great power, great responsibility. We have responsibility.
Uh huh.
And you know.
So here's my one complaint about Facebook, and I should also say I'm not on it, so I'm not really entitled to have this opinion. But from what I've seen of Facebook, it appears to me that this is the absolute end result of capitalism. By the way, I'm very pro-capitalism, but we have now actually made ourselves products. Like, it's gone so far that we are now products, and that Facebook page is our advertisement.
Of course it is.
It is the best shot from 300 shots at the party. It's as if we had a photo shoot for the macaroni and cheese, and it's the one time that it looked really gooey and awesome. Right. So then we put that up, and then we also put up the time. You would think some people hang out with almost celebrities all the time because they have several photos of them in a celebrity. So their life must consist of hanging with lots of celebrities and being at great parties and blah, blah, blah. And what troubles me or what I'm concerned about is, so everyone has this very curated version of themselves, which is an advertisement.
Right.
And then you're on the outside. You already feel, I remember being a kid, you already feel like a fucking loser and that you're not doing what everyone else is doing. And now you can visually actually see that. Yes, in fact, I'm not doing any of this cool shit. But that's the part where I don't like that we've kind of become products, and it's kind of bullshit. No one's life even resembles what their life appears to be on Facebook.
Well, it'd be fun to start a social network that's like
the truth
inverse Instagram. Yeah, or like the truth.com I think is the anti-smoking campaign.
Oh, okay.
But
well, that'll end soon. But who smokes?
They'll fix that. They'll cure it. And then you're basically like like an Instagram with a little negative sign in front of it.
Yes.
Like a negative Instagram where It's all the pictures of your worst moments.
Well, it's the picture of your HPV after you hooked up with the super hot looking girl you were in a photo with on Facebook.
It's
the Vine video of the doctor calling you into Planned Parenthood. It's the Tuesday after you did ecstasy where you're suicidal.
That's really funny. It's the after the picture with the celebrity. It's the security guard dragging you away.
Yes, exactly.
Because you were touching them in a
or you got trampled by the three other people.
Yeah, yeah, no, that is true, but it also, all the people that look at that, but they're also focused on themselves, you know, like making themselves.
Well, that's very true. You're probably more, you're so busy, yeah, we're curating your own page that you're probably not even truly consuming anyone else's.
So we're going to take a picture for my Instagram, and then we're going to look like we're having an amazing time.
Well, let me tell you this. I know from experience, you have to take about 60 pictures of me before you get one that I'll possibly post on Twitter. I mean, it's almost impossible to get a good photo of me. So I've been down this road. I speak from experience.
I just don't feel like that's possible, Dax.
In my head, it is.
Now, how do you have a giant tattoo on your arm, but you're an actor? And did you ever say, like, well, someone's going to have to, like, hide this at some point?
Well, this giant tattoo on my arm covers a previous giant tattoo on my arm that I got when I was 18 and had absolutely zero idea I was going to be an actor. So that was not the concern when I started getting tattoos.
It was a giant shoulder dick before? What was it?
It was a humongous shoulder dick.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now it's a gorgeous tree.
It was the it's a cherry blossom tree. But it was the cover of a Soul Side album, this punk band I liked. And it was a sun with fire coming out. And I got this in 1993, the year I graduated high school.
Okay, good.
And then there was no such thing as tribal tattoos. Well, lo and behold, tribal tattoos got very popular on the Jersey Shore, and here I was stuck with a tribal tattoo, so I had to get rid of that. So sure. That's where the cherry blossom tree comes from. But when I was first meeting with our show creator, Jason Kadams, to talk about being on Parenthood, I knew... wow, these things potentially go for 7 years, and right. I do not want to go through an hour of makeup for 7 years. And I said to him, I would really love to be on the show, but I got to have my own tattoos because I just can't bear the makeup for the next 7 years. And he was like, oh, no problem. I like the tattoos.
Fortunately, it was not the CPK logo, which I'm sure you were very close to getting.
I have that, but it's been covered as well.
With the Pepsi?
I had the Pepsi. I covered it with a Coca-Cola one. Because they bought another chain I loved.
Yeah, you just got it. You got to be careful with branded tattoos.
But I, it is a real drag to be.
It's a beautiful tattoo.
Yeah, you know. And how often do you have your shirt off in movies? I mean, you do, but not enough that you can typically cover it with wardrobe.
Right.
But I've had it in a few, which I don't think really you should. I mean, it's clearly Dax Shepard if you see this tattoo, but at the same time, I don't know. I kind of, who cares?
Is that the only one? Do you have any other tattoos?
No, I have.
Oh, nice.
That's also from high school. This is two 1 week old. This is.
It's a bell.
Yeah, as you can imagine why. Yep, yep. It's on my ring finger.
Because you love the
my father,
Philadelphia?
Yes, because my father was a metallurgist who made bells for towers.
Because you love. I know, because you loved Saved by the Bell.
Exactly. Your
favorite
Zach
show.
Morris.
Zach.
Still trying to be him.
Yeah.
Wasn't that his name? The character's
name?
It was
Zach Morris, yeah.
And he's got two first names in real life. Mark Adam or something?
No, Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Oh, Mark Paul was where I got... But now he's got a Gosselaar attached?
Well, he always was Mark Paul
Gosselaar. I don't think so. I think he was Mark Adam.
No, he pretty much was Mark Paul Gosselaar before Ryan Gosling.
But if we watch the title sequence for Saved by the Bell, which we will when this ends,
yeah.
You believe that it says that full name?
Mark Paul Gosselaar, yeah.
God, I thought it just said Mark Paul.
No.
I guess I just zeroed in on that great name, Mark Paul. It almost sounds like a member of KISS.
Two first names, yeah.
Yeah, Peter Chris.
Peter Chris, and then Mark Paul.
Yeah. But a good friend of mine, you might even know him. Do you know Ryan Hansen, that actor?
I don't know if I know.
You've seen him. He was on Veronica Mars with Kristen.
Don't tell me what I've seen. Okay, no, I probably have.
No, but the show I think you saw was where they played waiters in L.A., and a bunch of great comedians were on it, and I can't think of the name of it right
Party
now.
Party Down?
Party Down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the cute blonde
Never
kid
heard of it.
Party Down.
Never heard of it.
He apparently works out at a gym where Mark Paul Gosling.
It's Gosselaar.
God
damn it.
Guzzler.
It's
Mark
not
Paul
Guzzler.
Guzzler.
That's a different.
Well, he works
shaved,
out.
That's Shaved by the Bell.
Shaved by the Bell. He works out at the same gym as him, and he said he is a fucking beast. He said he is just a brick shithouse.
Just ripped?
Yeah, he looks amazing.
You got some guns on there, Dax Shepard.
It's all in preparation.
And you just lifted your arm so I could see it flex a little more, too. Is there a raccoon in that tree running up and down?
Someone threw a baseball at my arm and just got lodged in there.
So you had to put a baseball in the other
arm. I went to the doctor. I said, doctor, I have a lot of swelling right in these areas here. My pectors and my... No, but I quit eating sugar about 7 months ago. I know you wanted to know about my diet.
I do.
That was on your list of laundry list.
And then we'll talk about your poops.
Yeah. On your laundry list of dream questions. I know it was up there. But I quit eating sugar about 7 months ago. And lo and behold, it's way easier to be in shape without sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to give that shit up too.
You know, what happened for me, we're getting into some shaking head, no signs. What happened for me is we, as just kind of a weird challenge, Chris and I were like, let's try to go a month without sugar. So we went a month, and then that month ended while we were on vacation. And then I ate so much sugar for 3 days, and it ended with me on the airplane home. I had two sundaes, And it, like, I finished the second Sunday, and I turned to Chris, and I was like, I can't fucking breathe. Like, I couldn't breathe. It was killing me that second Sunday. And I just made this connection in my head, like, this shit's really poisonous for me.
What if she meant no sex? There's not going to be any sugar.
Well, I'd have to get a concubine. I think that's obvious.
You just got to get one of them concubines.
Yeah. It goes from total fidelity to I need Tokyo a harem. Up. Yeah. Not I'm going to need one person or a mistress. I'm going to need a concubine.
An entire harem, if that's what this game's going to be.
Because that's how much sugar she's giving me. It would take a fleet of women.
Good save.
I got to say,
that was a very sweet save.
Really tactful.
Maneuver. You must feel, I mean, there's no question that you must feel better.
I feel way better. And in fact, a few weeks ago on my sister's birthday, so it was around August 20th, I took her and, like, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 other people to Houston's, which is my favorite restaurant. Do you ever eat there?
I've been to Houston's.
Oh, God, I love it there. So we went there, all, I don't know, eight total probably. And we ate like barbarians. We all of us ate so much food. And then, as a surprise, because they knew it was her birthday, they brought out every single dessert they sell was on this table. And that's probably the hardest challenge I've had in this last 7 months. And I watched all of them eat all of these desserts. They looked fantastic. And then the car ride home, people were suicidal. Everyone was miserable. My wife's stepmom threw up all night. Oh. I felt great that car ride home.
Yeah.
Energized. Virile,
mm-hmm.
Very healthy. Right. And I had overeaten. It's just when you add sugar to the mix that you get like really suicidally uncomfortable.
It's the same kind of fun, voyeuristic pleasure of watching people deal with getting really drunk and then hungover.
Yes. You really need to see them the next day.
I mean, it's kind of, I hate New Year's Eve, but I love it at the same time because it's kind of fun to look around and go, you are not going to feel
yes.
good at all tomorrow, and well, I'm going to wake up at 9 at 8 a.m. and feel and be ready for breakfast.
Well, I have the unique opportunity to see a lot of people very early in the morning in a makeup trailer, which I see regularly, you know.
Yep.
And I'll be on location of a movie, and everyone's bonding at night, and I'm jealous, and everyone's getting hammered. And then it's always that reality check at 6 a.m. when we're getting our makeup done, and they're literally sewing their faces back together and ice compresses and people are throwing up in the trash can.
Let all the fluid
it's
out.
It's so messy. And I just shift my focus to like morning time, which is, I feel pretty darn good in the makeup.
But there's
trailer.
So many things that pretty much everything that our culture pushes at us, we're supposed to avoid. Sugar, sodium.
Yeah.
Preservatives. Yeah. Like, literally everything we're not supposed to.
All the money's behind the shit. Yeah, you don't really want to consume.
God damn it.
My analogy is, like, I left the house at 18 with 65 habits that have now taken me my whole life to break. I mean, really, I'm going to turn 40 in January, and I'm just finally getting back to where I was at probably 12 years old, you know?
Right.
With the exception of coffee, which I can't foresee myself giving up.
Well, it's all right to have
cups of coffee before you leave the house. And 12 throughout the day.
Stressful for your heart, but yeah. You know.
My adrenal glands are in great shape.
There's a vein in your forehead that's...
Well, you can keep an eye on my heart rate, which is always helpful. But yeah, other than the caffeine, that's really all. But man, you just start packing on these habits, right? I mean, I started smoking at 16 and drinking very heavily at 18. And
it's fun to abuse yourself when you're young because it just feels fun.
Yeah, it really is.
I can take her. What do you got for me?
Yeah. Especially where I'm from in Michigan, it's really, you know, it's kind of how you earn your colors. Like, you know, I still will meet, I'll talk to people in from England, and they're culturally, they still have a much different view of about drinking than we do, which
of
is,
course.
They'll say, well, you know, why don't you drink? And I'll go, oh, well, you know, I drink. Well, it's a lot. Well, I don't know. I drink like 12 beers every night and maybe a couple Jack and Diets. I'm like, oh, I'd be real proud of that. Like, that would be something you would actually feel very good about.
Right.
And, you know, culturally, that's in, you know, Michigan's not too far off from that. You know,
does Michigan have a royal family too?
Yes, they do. They do. It's you know who lives in Michigan, and I've seen him once or twice when I've been home, is Chuck Woolery, which is the greatest sighting you can have in Detroit. Because he's the prince of Detroit. He Nope. I saw him at a Coney Island, which is they're everywhere in Detroit. They're chili dog restaurants, and they're everywhere. And I saw him at 2 in the morning at a Coney Island in a camel hair floor length coat.
God.
Just holding court. And I said to Kristen, we should maybe move back and just go the Chuck Woolery route. You know?
How did she take
just parade
that?
Around the Coney Islands at 2 in the morning or camel
when
hair coats.
You see Chuck and then you leave, do you say, I'll see you in 2 and 2?
I was so tempted to because I loved that show as a kid. I mean, I really, really,
Love
I think
Connection.
I recorded it with my VCR.
But he's really the last of that game show host archetype.
Yeah, but he is, you know, he's the Brad Pitt of Detroit.
Still.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say that because
he must be like 70.
But he looks phenomenal.
Still?
I mean, he is very, yeah, he is a walking Facebook page. He doesn't need to, you know, wade through the.
Do you have a lot of work? Like teeth caps, a lot of work?
No, I didn't notice. I didn't notice. It looked all very real and
Woolery.
Healthy. Yeah. He looks great.
We got to get Woolery on the podcast at some point. That's great.
You'll have to go to Detroit.
I'll go to Detroit. I was just in Detroit.
Where are you for what?
I was on a comedy tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where did you play? Do you remember? The State Theater or Fox? How big of a place was it?
It was about 10,000 people. It was
Holy
like the
shit.
UAB, the bank.
Oh, wow. So it was like an arena.
Katie, look it up.
Who was on this tour with you?
Louis C.K. and Sarah Silverman and
holy shit balls.
Bill Burr and
this is a big thing.
It was a big fun tour.
How many cities?
20. It was 19 or 20 cities total. I did like 14 of 15 of them.
And how many shows in each city?
Like one four? Show in each city.
Oh, only one.
Yeah. So.
Oh, the Palace in Auburn Hills.
No, it wasn't. I wasn't. We weren't at the.
Exit 69.
That was last year. This was like the UA, like the bank, something, something bank center. They were all outdoor amphitheaters. It wasn't.
It was outdoors.
The Pistons did not play at a venue that Dave Matthews
at
was
Red
playing.
Rock.
Yeah. We played Red Rocks too.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That must have been very cool.
It was great.
Was it?
I went to high school in Denver, so it was really a big deal for me.
Oh, that's a real coming home.
It was really cool.
And what kind of weather did you have that night?
It was. I remember being.
Mind if I
nice.
Take my pants off while you tell me?
What are you slowly? I say the
was
trees.
It nice though?
It was. Just go to oddballfest.com, Katie, and then just
was
click.
It technically in Clarkston?
That's possible. That's a city. That's where
Kid
Rock lives.
Yeah, the DTE Energy Music Theater.
I've not been there, but that's where Kid Rock lives. I want to say Eminem even lives right out there too, Clarkston.
That's probably where all your streets are named after miles.
No, it's way beyond that.
Way
it's
beyond
about
that.
20 miles north of.
But you just said it then.
I said what?
Miles?
Miles.
Mm-hmm. I said it's where all their miles, and you're like, no, it's 20 miles beyond then.
So but you're referring right to 8 Mile?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And 12 Mile, there's a 12 Mile?
There is a 12 Mile. It goes all the way to 14, and then 15 Mile is then named Maple, and then they start getting names. But if you were to chart where they all live from
it's
8 Mile, it would be
miles.
38 Mile or something.
Oh, well, that just went up. You just said 20, and now you just went to 38 miles.
I did. You're right. It should have been 28.
But I actually really enjoyed I spent time in Ferndale.
Yeah, very, very cool town. Right next to Royal Oak. You probably ate.
Right next to Royal Oak, yeah.
Ate in Royal Oak. Yeah, most of my friends from high school have since relocated to Ferndale or Royal Oak.
It's good. It's weather's
it's like a pocket of it's like the Silver Lake of
it's about an inch Michigan. Away from getting fucking cold there right now.
Oh yeah.
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 So.
It usually as I recall, it was always Halloween, you usually get some snow when you're trick or treating.
No way.
Oh yeah.
It's not far.
Yeah, so you really limited what, you know, you can't we didn't have the slutty movement, which is so nice out here. You had to bundle up. You know,
right.
Girls weren't cocktail waitresses or whatever
no,
they go as
everyone's
now.
Everyone's packed
you know?
Tightly.
Yes, for safety.
Should we mention This Is Where I Leave You at all?
Sure, let's talk about that.
You're in a movie called This Is Where I Leave You. Thank you for listening to the
Thanks
podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys.
It'd be amazing if we just ended it right there.
Judging on whenever this comes out, which I don't
When's
know.
This
is a live
this,
stream.
No.
It'll be out by then because it comes out tomorrow. But I have The Judge coming out October 1st.
Oh.
Do you know that movie?
No. Oh, that's the movie with Robert Downey Jr.
Robert
Duvall.
Yeah, and Billy Bob.
October 10th, is This Is Where I Leave You?
No.
That's when this is coming out.
So this comes out on the day The Judge comes out. So let's talk about The Judge. No one's gonna go back in time to see This Is Where I Leave You.
Great job, This Is Where I Leave You. Great
Thank
fucking
you.
Cast.
And yeah. then what
the,
a hit.
The judge. I mean, who would have thought, like, every Oscar.
It was embarrassing for Kristen when we beat Frozen to become the fifth biggest movie of all time.
The kids movie. Kids are going crazy for This Is Where I Leave You.
Yeah, they can't get enough sexual innuendos from Jane Fonda.
An adult dramedy with some of the best
Bateman
performers.
Little kids love Bateman.
They
always have.
Fucking love. They love
because they relate to him. He's a kid at heart.
Always. Yeah. They loved.
That's who you need to get in here,
Bateman.
You got to hear his. I won't tell any of them out of school, but he'll tell them to you. His Ricky Schroeder stories and stuff are phenomenal. I mean, being on that show and then having his own show, it's just an incredible.
It's such a surreal
to me. I can't really relate to being famous as a kid.
The Jason and Justine power sibling duo was legendary.
It was formidable.
I mean, you fucking Family Ties and Hogan Family.
What a block.
Right there.
They owned that hour of TV.
I mean, their father's balls should have been bronzed.
Speaking of this, you're in Colorado. Did you have, in the late 80s, the very popular Hardee's commercials where the guy would go, cha-ching. He was working at a register and he'd go, 2 quarter pounders, fries, and a drink, cha-ching. And he would do like karate and he'd yell cha-ching.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
It was humongous on the East Coast. I'm not kidding. Like Dennis Rodman had shaved in his head in the 1990 Pistons. Cha-ching was shaved in his head. And on his fucking Jeep, it said cha-ching. The Saints, the New Orleans Saints, their team motto was cha-ching. So the most amazing. So I grew up very aware of cha-ching. So I'm talking with Seth, and I don't know how on earth it gets on this topic, but somehow I learned that Seth Green was the fucking cha-ching guy.
He was?
Yes. Not only was he the cha-ching. His story is so phenomenal.
Green was cha-ching?
Seth Green was the redheaded cashier who did the karate and yelled cha-ching.
I'm going to text him cha-ching
and
see what he says.
What's so funny is that he did this commercial when he was probably 15, okay? And he did it out here in California. There's no Hardee's out here. He never saw it on a TV. He has no idea that this commercial he's done has become a cultural phenomenon on the East Coast. He's completely unaware of it, right? So he gets called by the New Orleans Saints saying, look at him. Oh, isn't
look at
it
his.
Awesome?
Turn the volume up, Katie.
Your order here, that'll be... One double cheeseburger, ching. Large fries and a large soda, cha-ching. 2 kids meals and 2 medium sodas, ching. 1 chicken sandwich, large fries, and a vanilla milkshake. Bada-bing. That'll be $62.75. We're a little shy.
Now, Seth's hair right there
is
like
awesome.
The Bellagio fountain.
Yeah, or a patchouli. What's the glass guy's name? Not patchouli. Sounds like that, though. That blows all those famous glass.
Oh, I don't know.
It's just Chuli, maybe. Chuli glass.
And it looks exactly like
his hair.
That gorgeous.
I ruined your great joke.
No,
and I want to formally apologize to you for putting your joke in a bear trap.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for your... I'm kidding. It's fine. I don't care. Okay.
So, but this isn't even the best part of the story. So here is Seth Green at whatever he is, 15 years old. He has no idea that Dennis Rodman has shaved in his head cha-ching, which he has made popular in this commercial. He gets a call from either Hardee's corporate or the New Orleans Saints, and they're in some bowl game, and they want to fly him to New Orleans to go out on the field and yell cha-ching in front of the audience of 100,000 people. This is all online, by the way. This is on YouTube. So the local New Orleans news channel does a story about the cha-ching guy coming to New Orleans to do this. So there's this great video online of Seth arriving in New Orleans. Everywhere he's walking on Bourbon Street, guys are going, cha-ching! Fucking cha-ching! They're going insane! And he doesn't know any... He doesn't know. He's in a trench coat, because that's the phase he was in.
Right.
They're painting him to be this struggling actor in the news piece, even though he's on a network sitcom at the time. And then, sure enough, he walks out in front of this sold-out crowd at the New Orleans Saints, goes to the middle of the 50-yard line, and yells cha-ching into a microphone, and the whole place explodes. And I said to him, I'm having the hardest time wrapping my mind around the fact that that's your real life experience. Like when you were 15, that actually happened where you went to an arena and you said two words and everyone went crazy. It's so out of my realm.
Do you have it right there?
Yeah.
Cue it up.
Where's the volume? Get that volume up.
Ever since that ad started running in New Orleans this fall.
Look at this. Oh. Look at him signing autographs.
He's got a ponytail coming out of the back of that hat.
He got the fucking key to New Orleans?
Yes, they gave him the key to the city for saying, look, and he has to do it on cue.
He didn't even write it.
Give me a gotcha chain.
Oh. Look at the trench coat.
The trench coat's amazing.
You said cha-ching, I said cha-chump.
But Seth was starting to understand that something unusual was going on here. Then came the pre-game pep rally.
Pre-game pep rally.
Fans wanted to hear, you guessed it.
Chicken sandwich and a large soda by bing.
So they fly this 17-year-old kid in VIP. Ching.
Oh.
The keys to the city. Bada bing.
God damn it. That guy's having fun.
It was yet to come. Imagine Seth Green loose on the floor of the dome. In front of
the dome. Oh, Seth Green is
wearing
a pole.
Yelling, chinging
fans.
Wearing
the weirdest pole out there.
Look how aggressive he's getting. It's so good.
So what's it like to be Seth Green tonight?
The spirit is amazing. Yeah. Cha-ching!
It's funny, like, watching his arc get really into it.
I'm very happy. I'm very well.
Think about it. He's on day five of yelling cha-ching around New Orleans. Is that? I
that
mean, that
was,
is the most incredible thing ever, isn't it?
That
did you get to know him as a human being on a movie set to find out that this was his childhood? He was also on Johnny Carson as like an 8-year-old with those Converse that went to your knees. I mean,
he, by the way, like the sweetest guy in the world
of anyone I've ever
Seth.
Worked with in my life.
I adore
he's
Seth
the
Green.
Nicest human ever,
and he actually can now say cha-ching because
yes.
His life has worked out in a great way.
Yes, yeah, the good guys won with him. I mean, he's my favorite.
So I assume you brought
he's
the story
so
up because it's Robert Duvall's catchphrase in The Judge.
That's exactly it.
Guilty. Every time, cha-ching.
Well, he doesn't even say guilty. He just bangs
cha-ching.
The gavel.
That's how
cha-ching.
He says guilty.
You're guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that means you're guilty. He would have said bada bing if you were innocent.
Bada bing. Cha-ching.
One Duvall story that is funny from that movie is, you know, I was doing my best to never acknowledge that I was sitting next to Tom, the consigliere from Godfather.
Yeah, you can't.
Or Downey, who's also like I idolize as a kid, because I wouldn't be able to do my job correctly.
Yeah,
if I
the
was
guy
acknowledging
from Back to School.
As I've been saying, the prick from Weird Science. I always wanted to work with him.
That's right.
You know, so I was just whatever. I was trying to just do my job and really not acknowledge all that stuff. Well, there was a moment, though, because we're in a courtroom a ton, and I'm his lawyer, and we're filming this scene, and I am in real life drinking a coffee, which I have accidentally left on the table of our desk in the courtroom. And it is like an 8 or 9 minute take, and he has a ton of dialogue, and everyone's going
and giving it his all, and then we cut,
and the director comes over, and he goes, well, that was unusable because of this, and he picks my coffee cup up and puts it on the ground, and I am so embarrassed that it gets immediately funny to me. And Duvall, who actually loved me, like he's such a sweetheart, and he really liked me, he goes, put the fucking cup away! Fucking, like, he let out a put the fucking cup away that shut the world down for about 4 minutes.
How do you cop to it? It's so embarrassing.
Well, of course, there's nothing to hide. I clearly had my coffee cup on the table, and my character's not drinking a Starbucks coffee in
the
scene.
You just pull the director's side and be like, I'll pay to comp it out. I'll pay to comp it out.
Well, yeah. Which actually they can paint out for about $5 nowadays. But it was
no.
I was almost weirdly grateful for it because it'll certainly be a memory I have for the rest of my life.
I don't.
I would have gotten like shaky voice.
Get the fucking cup off the table.
I don't know. My wife's pregnant, and I'm not very smart.
I tell you, I used to be in special ed.
I don't. Don't even ask what happened to Pete. Whatever that other guy's name.
He didn't make it.
Anyway, I'm a big fan.
So.
Is this a bad time to ask for a selfie?
I brought some Apocalypse Now posters. Is that off the table now?
Could you just sign a few of them? Don't say to who yet, because I'm going to put some of these on eBay. I'm going to keep one, and then I'm going to put the rest of them on eBay.
Yeah, it wasn't until Toronto Film Festival was like last week, and I went there. We opened the festival, that movie, and it wasn't until I was sitting there watching the movie, I was like, holy smokes, man. I am fucking in all these scenes I'm in with Duvall and Downey. It's incredible.
So crazy.
I feel like Seth in New Orleans.
Well, you and your wife kind of have the, you know, with her raising all the Veronica Mars money. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, these are weird things that are happening. And are like, you have this person to take this journey with.
Wow.
And the Frozen journey.
Yeah.
And all of it.
Well, you know, what's funny is this woman who's directing Parenthood right now, she and I were talking last night on set about, like, God, do you believe in God? And I was like, well, not really, this and that. And I will say what has been informative is to be around Kristen for the last 7 years and to see how she lives her life and to see how generous she is and how positive she is and how available she is for every fucking cause. And to see how much good vibe surrounds her and how much good luck and goodwill, like, it has opened my eyes to the fact that you really can kind of travel through life in any way you want. And I certainly was very pessimistic and fatalistic. And I got those exact results, you know, most of the time. And to see her approach to life and to witness it firsthand, it's really kind of some of it has trickled off on me, and I've almost attribute anything good that's happened to me as just like kind of consuming her superpower.
It is. I mean, you know, with obvious exceptions, I mean, there are some things that are out of people's control.
Obviously.
But a lot of times most of the time people are the architect of whatever the bridge is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
That can be a shit bridge.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or that can be a crystal bridge. You know, it's like whatever people create. And you see it a lot. You see micro versions of it on social media where people will say something shitty and then someone else will go, they'll react negatively. And then the first person will be like, what's your fucking problem? It's like, wow, you didn't even see.
Yeah.
Like it's just like not even realizing that we are so much responsible for, you know, a substantial percentage of the outcomes. Like,
you're right,
because if you
respond with like benevolence and love, more often than not, that person's armor will kind of come off, and they'll meet you halfway. Because my reaction on Twitter is to be like, "You're a fucking idiot," and let me tell you why. Here's why you're factually not correct.
I have a spreadsheet. You
Kristen will be way more positive and generous that way. And her response,
so she's able
is
to
better. And that's,
let it go.
And you're right. That's a
let it go.
Not her song though.
I know, but it's from
the
movie.
I'm not married to Adina.
I know, but it's from the movie.
It is from the movie. Yeah. She more says, and the "Do you want to build a snowman?" To
it
people,
it fit the joke.
It really did.
Like
once
the snowman thing.
Once again, I got that trusty bear trap out.
I gotta chew my leg off now in this bit.
I was building this bit. It can't be this coincidental. Observing her life. For instance, we will be in Vegas. We're not big gamblers, but we'll sit down to play blackjack. She'll win. No joke. I've seen her win over 20 hands in a row.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I'm just losing. Because I've decided when I sat down, I'm going to lose 500 is what I'm willing to lose. I got to
so
set
funny.
My limit.
You go in with the lose. I know this is not going to turn out well.
Here's what I'm willing to lose for this
entertainment. This is my acceptable loss margin.
Exactly. And then I just proceed to hand them that money. You know, a victory for me is it taking a couple hours for me to hand them that money. And then she, conversely, will win 23 hands in a row, never increase her fucking bet. It gets maddening. I'm like, honey, you're on a streak. Pump your bet. This is bet management 101. You got to do. No, she's not trying it. She's not greedy. And then she just keeps winning. So 7 years of witnessing this, it's beyond coincidental. There's something else is at work. I certainly don't know what it is, but, you know, something's happening.
So what is it that you provide for her?
the null hypothesis to everything. She is, you know, when I've said before, when we meet someone on the street and they say hello, my very first thought is, what is this guy's angle? What does he want? Her first thought is, this guy might cure cancer.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Let's talk to this guy. He's liable to have a solution for cold fission.
That's very nice.
Yeah. And so she's wrong and I'm wrong. But when we get to that compromise in the middle, that's most often the actual right way to look at things, you know. So we are a very good counterbalance.
So you have a bell tattooed on your marriage finger.
Yes.
Does she have a German Shepherd tattooed on her?
She said she wants to get the outline of a German Shepherd, probably on the inside of her finger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. Or that, or the guy holding the shepherd stick, even though it's not spelled that way. I'd be open to either.
Or just your face.
I also, and this was in front of other people, I suggested, how about the outline of a polar bear, because that's my totem animal. Mm-hmm. To which someone said, you gave yourself that totem animal, I'm guessing. You picked the top of the carnivore food chain. And I said, I had a lot of polar bear stuffed animals as a kid, and I really liked them. Yeah, I guess I did give myself that totem.
You're allowed to do that.
So who knows what, you know, maybe she'll get it. Maybe it'll be a German Shepherd taking a nice walk with a polar bear.
That's a lot of tattoo for a finger.
It is. I guess the compromise would be,
I should have mentioned she has 18-inch long fingers. That's the one thing people don't realize about her.
They digitally take them out. trust me, though.
Well,
they're like the thumbs in the Robin's book. Uma Thurman played her. Remember, she had gigantic thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
Movie. Another roadside attraction.
Even Cowgirls Get the Blues.
Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. Thank you.
Nice job, Kyle.
And it's Tom Robbins.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So the judge comes out October
2010.
October
2010. Mm-hmm. And Parenthood is, you know, it's just airing around the clock until, you know, whenever that stops. 13 episodes of that starting this month.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much.
I'm so happy and excited for you that you also came out of the booze swamp.
Yeah. Let's go get a cocktail.
It's time.
Yeah. We've proven what we needed to prove.
A month. We'd both be like 40 pounds overweight. Yeah. And
I'd be kicked off
everything.
Of Parenthood. Yeah, yeah.
I'd have no job left. I'd barely be able to do a podcast.
I'd be negotiating 3 hours of supervised visits with my children.
You and I somehow would both have mullets and like stringy mustaches. Yeah. Even in just
somehow I'd have all fake teeth all of a sudden.
Hey Dax, check out my snakeskin visor.
I'm sure glad we made this decision.
This is the best decision we ever. Wait, I'm starting to feel reality again. Quick, give me the booze.
Reality's seeping in.
Yeah. Once you go back down that path, you can never let reality seep back in again.
My guy's driving up from Huntington Beach. Where is your guy coming from?
Fuck, man, I don't even know. What? Fuck it, I'll drive. Well, that brings us to the end of the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You've been a delightful guest.
I'm so glad you invited me.
Yeah, thanks for doing it.
Yeah, for
sure. I'm sorry it took.
I want to do your TV show too. Is this a launching pad to do your TV show?
Do you want
to
do At Midnight? You fucking crush At Midnight.
Well, thank you.
You would crush.
My mom loves it.
Does she?
Honest to God, my mom is obsessed.
She's single?
Yeah. No, but she cheats.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
She want to go to Tokyo?
That's where I got all these crazy opinions around. Yeah.
Yeah, you should do At Midnight for sure.
I would love to.
That's done. Done. Right. Done.
Fuck everything.
Enjoy your burrito.
See ya.
Cha-ching!
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.